which is what we called to get. We're going to be playing some interviews with from the CAB meeting, the Community Action Board meeting.
How to get a radio.
I know that you are you were on the board for a while, or it may even still be. Are you on the board?
I was on the CAB board for a long, long time, but I got to where moving and being living in a car and health issues caused me to quit almost everything at once.
Mm-hmm.
Everything except the FEMA board, and now I'm off of that.
Well, you're watching the city council pretty closely. I mean, I know you
I love it.
You helped us listen to the city council the other night when we don't have community television over here, and we kind of, you let us listen to the audio portion on the phone. City council has passed a task force on homelessness, or a task force on homelessness, as I call it. What's your sense? Is this a Crone commission, sort of like the Crone Crapper commission,
I don't know.
More posturing, or is it real?
I think that it is what the people who come to sit on it want to make of it within certain bounds of, you know, faith and money, I guess. You know? They can pick their own staff support. Well, I guess they'll get Gene or something, but it just depends on who's picked, you know? We don't very often have a city advising board, even the permanent ones that are very visionary, let alone insistent, you know? But they can do stuff. Some of them have.
Hmm. Well, that's not very clear. Do you feel the city council is moving in a direction to support homeless people and expand homeless services and take real action? I mean, I don't, obviously.
It's going to have an immediate and palpable effect on the problems people have.
Well, things like the beating of homeless people, the criminalization of poor people.
It's better, though. We're going to have to circle that whole city hall and give it an exorcism.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm asking you, are they or aren't they? What's the story?
I don't know. I mean, you know, are you asking me to speculate on what the different city councilmen have said?
No, I'm looking for your evaluation of the city council as of May 20th, 1999, that it's been 6 months. It's time for us to look back and start judging what's going on and what's not going on.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, some of us have been doing that all along.
That's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was talking to Theodora today and had a little discussion about how important that is on a personal level, too. No, if they don't have those guts or sentience to put people on this board to make it worth something, you know, and have an open process that keeps it open to all other people in the course of whatever it takes on, what it deems as a work or a task.
You know, I think we're going to do, I'm going to play a song that might will give you my sense of how the Santa Cruz community is being treated by the City Council. And feel free to call us back if you have any thoughts on the subject.
On the song?
Well, on the...
Should I give you my last thoughts for the council?
Yeah, on what?
I'm dismayed, you know. I feel like the election was a ripoff, but that's it up for now.
Hmm. Interesting. Why was the election a ripoff?
Well, these people aren't who they were presented as during the election, you know.
You're talking about Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar?
As a whole, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to get particular about it. Be
feel free. Get particular about it.
No. That was my opinion of the whole impact, you know. I mean, I can sympathize with them, too, but, you know, we were looking for Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders, you know, and they ain't there yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Linda. Mm-hmm. Appreciate the opinion. Anything you want to add before we move on?
Yeah, tell them about my radio show.
Oh, yeah. You are, of course, now on Free Radio Santa Cruz yourself from 10 to 12 every Wednesday morning.
Yes.
And that new show is called?
I forgot.
Well, you
picked a wonderful name, but I haven't gotten over calling it Linda's show.
Lighthouse Linda's Laments,
no,
perhaps?
No, it's not lamentful. Well, maybe. Like the
well, you can tune in and catch the name. When that'll be Wednesday from 10 to 12
yeah.
On 10 to noon every Wednesday on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to 96.3 FM. Thanks,
yeah.
Linda.
And if you have good folks from fandoms, I can play them on the air.
Alrighty.
Bye.
when you attend the funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are. We will all burn together when we burn. There'll be no need to stand and wait your turn. When it's time for the fallout and St. Peter calls us all out, we'll just drop our agendas and adjourn. And we will all go together when we go. Every Hottentot and every Eskimo. When the air becomes Uranus, we will all go simultaneous. Yes, we all will go together when we all go together. Yes, we all will go together when we go.
And that's Tom Lehrer, We Will All Go Together When We Go. I was actually going to play the Masochism Tango, which is how I think the city council is treating our city at the moment, but I got to cue that one up. Well, we have a special guest just entered the studio, hot from the Homeless Services Center. That's Becky Johnson, who she's sort of one of those turncoat expatriates who was once on the board. Say something into the mic, Becky.
Hey, Free Radio Santa Cruz, are you out there?
I believe
Turn
so.
Turn your radios up.
All right. Well, Becky, this is, what, the first time you've been back to a Homeless Services Center meeting for a while?
I've missed a few. I think this is the third meeting I've been to since the merger, and since I'm no longer on the Board of Directors.
And I know I've criticized the board as being kind of a merchant-dominated bureaucrat, no civil rights, thank you very much, minimum action kind of board, but what did you hear today, you know?
You have no faith in Donna Murillo and Linda Steino?
Well, it's hard to have faith in Donna Murillo. I think that she hadn't heard that Lou Rice was on his hunger fast until, 22 days into it or something. I mean, finally, that was fully a week and a half or 2 weeks after the Metro Santa Cruz came out to say that this man, Lou Rice, was starving himself to death for decent food.
Donna said that she went down and she met personally with Lou Rice on the steps of the post office.
20 days afterward.
She talked to him for at least 45 minutes before she admitted that she was on the board of directors. And he had already told her that she obviously didn't know much about homeless people before he found out she was on
Lou, I got to watch out. That southern tongue can sometimes be wicked. So you just came from one of these board meetings. Did you sit through to the end of this meeting? Or?
Yeah, it wasn't a very long meeting. I know CCH meetings typically went 2 hours and often went over by 15 minutes or so. But The Homeless Services Center meetings are pretty darn quick.
Well, the Homeless Services Center, of course, is now the group that covers not only everything that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless used to cover, the ISSP, the Interagency Shelter Program, the community hosts throw us $2 million and we'll turn out 30 or 40 people living space.
I think it's $2.3
million. $2.3 million. And, of course, the entire Homeless Community Resource Center, Karen Gillette's domain, or it was until April 30th, now run by Ken Cole. So they actually covering a lot of homeless services out there. What I know, there's been a lot of concern about the beating of homeless people, about Lou Rice's hunger fast, and concerns about food quality, concerns about how people are treated, and of course the failure to have any adequate shelter for homeless people. 28 spaces, what, for 500 to 1500 homeless people?
Well, three of those four issues came up. The one issue that really wasn't discussed was how staff treat homeless people and those issues, but they did talk extensively about Lou Rice's hunger strike. And Lou was not there.
Was he invited?
He may have been invited. Ken Cole, the new executive director of the Homeless Services Center, says that he's in daily contact with Lou. Lou now has a bed down at the River Street Shelter, mm-hmm. and comes by on almost a daily basis and talks
for a drink of water, I suppose.
Again, the drinking fountain is not hooked up yet.
And we're still waiting for that one, right?
We're still waiting.
How's the food out there?
The food is marginal still.
So it's business as usual. Lou, you lost a lot of weight, but it didn't seem to go too far, at least not yet.
There's room for improvement. Now, I didn't see this. This is just what I deduced from what people were saying at the meeting, but that the food, they felt that it was marginally adequate, but that there was really room for improvement, and that they've gotten the hygiene as best they can given the makeshift.
And stop mixing the cereal in the mop sink, that sort of thing.
I don't know about mm-hmm. that. I did meet with the homeless representative, Dennis Majursik or something. He has an unusual last name that mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm badly mispronouncing.
Mm-hmm.
He was at the meeting. Unfortunately, he did not speak the entire meeting. So,
How many people are on this board? How many people were there at the meeting?
There were... ten people, and then Don Lane arrived shortly before the meeting ended.
Don Lane, former city council member, formerly head of the Youth Opportunities Double Rainbow Ice Cream, booster of Linda Steiner. Dead Rainbow Ice Cream, and the booster of the city council candidate slate, the Canfield Banker Downtown Management Corporation slate. Opponent of any changes in the sleeping ban, at least opponent of the sleeping ban repeal initiative. What is old Don Lane up to? What are they all up to out there? I have a dim view. I know we had a brief encounter with someone who was on one of these boards, and I was accused of being, I guess it was, yesterday morning. I talked to a relatively soft-spoken man who was concerned that I was bad-mouthing the board in an ad hominem fashion, in a way that was very unproductive. But what did the board produce today? I know that there's a real serious issue of homeless beatings. I already talked about the two beatings that have been verified by police accounts, and supposedly there are arrests soon to be happening, but that doesn't protect people who are outside and need a safe place to sleep. What did the board decide to do on that one?
The board has not decided to do anything on that.
So they decided to do nothing, in other words.
The executive director, the brand new Ken Cole, did push for... He said that we've got to talk about expanding some shelter space. He says, I'm turning away 6 to 7 people each day from the ISSP program.
And he told us there were, of course, many more that were actually not coming because they were discouraged.
Yeah, and he also said that, too, that they're discouraged from even wasting their time in coming by because they know that they'll be cut from that. He thought that the minimum that they could do would be to expand the ISSP by an additional 20 spaces in the near future. I did not hear anyone on that board saying, yes, yes, let's do that. And then he treaded into even more dangerous water by saying, but what we really need is something like a homeless campground. and that that is the next logical step in terms of cost-effective, safe shelter for homeless people.
I bet you could feel the chill in the air.
Yeah, I didn't hear any enthusiastic response from that, although I was thrilled to hear him say that. I'm certain Karen Gillette would never have said such a thing at a HSC board meeting.
Did he get any flack or any support? What did they?
There was sort of grudging agreement that shelter is inadequate, and they did talk about how the supply of shelter does drop so dramatically from the winter program to the remaining 8 months of the year.
So this $1 million board, however, did not find that it's hard to do any immediate appropriating to deal with this situation?
Kim said that in other programs he's seen, there is a kind of a drop-off from a winter program to there. But he says in Santa Cruz, here it's like a cliff. You go from 160 spaces to 22. I was glad he said 160, too.
The Balkan, of course, claimed last night it was 200, and I think it's more like 125, but...
The highest number that have ever, to my knowledge, have ever been housed in the armory on a single night was 137.
Mm-hmm. So maybe he was talking about the armory plus the church program?
No. Rodkin could...
Ken Cole.
Oh, Ken Cole?
The Homeless Services Director. But whatever he was talking about, what...
I think it's actually a little higher than that on certain nights.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've gotten up to 180.
Are they taking any action in the next month to deal with this issue? Did they move on any action items?
They did not. I think that they're on one of the other areas that they're planning on coming out with a statement about the hate crimes against homeless people, and... there was general agreement, although no motion was made.
I agreed it was generally bad for them to be seen as sponsoring hate crimes against the homeless by not having adequate shelter and not looking for it.
I don't know that they took any responsibility for the hate crimes other than they're committed against their clients.
Right. Well, since his hate crimes have been going on pretty vividly for the last 4 months, and actually for decades, but specifically and very vividly for the last 4 months, we've recommended, I guess Kate Wells, who's a local attorney, recommended the city council immediately open up an emergency zone. Did that come up at all, that proposal?
The emergency zone proposal? No, that didn't come up. I thought about bringing it up myself, but I opted to be a little bit more of an observer. Although I did share some things about the beatings of homeless people directly with the board.
Is there something you want to share with us around that?
Well, I told the board, Sergeant Lauren Baker is now on the Homeless Services Center.
This is Sticky Fingers Butchie Baker.
Yeah, and they did call him Butchie.
Renowned for his 1992 being the focus of a city council investigation around charges by teen women that there was improper sexual behavior by him. Of course, he was cleared by the grand jury, the district attorney, the internal affairs department, and the state attorney.
He said that the police's hands were tied because the homeless people were just not coming forward and reporting them, and there was just limited what they could do to investigate these that they were well aware of and had been aware of. So, contrary to the statement that they released to the Sentinel a few months back.
What was the statement of the Sentinel?
There was a, I guess it was in the community notebook section, they said that that some people had been saying that there were beatings against homeless people, but they didn't have any evidence of it and doubted the veracity of it.
I guess hospital reports and public reports to the city council for people like Mr. Sessner.
Yeah, Larry, he said they spoke specifically about Larry Cessna, the homeless man who approached the task force last January and told them that he'd been beaten up, but that after he'd reported, he received a ticket in the mail for public intoxication. Not that he was ever cited by any officer, but it was just delivered in the mail as though...
A special gift for his complaint that the police department hadn't taken adequate knowledge of a beating of homeless people.
And he related that ticket as a retaliatory ticket for having made the report. Butchie Baker denied that. He said that it was just because there were two different agencies making the tickets, or the SCPD was investigating one, and it's some other agency he claimed had done the open container ticket.
You know, I wanted to get into this more deeply, but I'm afraid I have someone waiting for a phone call. What I'd like to do is there more that we should talk about on this issue? I mean, there probably is. Why don't we continue this after, would you like to join us to talk with Roxana Kistapache, who last night attended the Beach Flats bulldozing meeting. They didn't call it that. It was a meeting to find out what the Beach Flats community wants to do. Now the city council is apparently throwing some of the city council members, at least in the opinion of some, are throwing their weight behind the Dolphin Lee project. Although I must say,
what Dolphin Lee project?
Oh, well, you were there.
Maybe I was there.
Well, before you talk about it, let's see if we can get a third person on the line and really go to town on this issue and see if we can get some real brainstorming here. Or
Roxanne was quite outspoken at the meeting last night.
Well, let's see if we can get her.
So we're now dialing. Hopefully we'll get this person shortly. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And I sure hope we don't get an answering machine. It looks like that's exactly what we're going to get.
John Robert.
Oh, all right.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Roxanne, you're on the air, Free Radio Santa Cruz, with Becky Johnson, who I think was also with you at your meeting last night. I know you've worked with groups like Friends of the Beach and like the Beach Flats Residents Association. Is that the proper term?
Mm-hmm.
In order to forestall certain city council schemes to hand over segments of the Beach Flats to Charlie Canfield. What happened last night? What's your view?
Well, it was really clear as the meeting went on that there was an agenda. And
tell us what the meeting was, first of all.
Well, you know, it was really unclear since...
This was a meeting in the Beach Flats. So
it was in the Beach Flats, in the trailer, in the community center.
And it was called by?
Tim Fitzmaurice, city councilman.
And who did he call this meeting, and what was his supposed apparent agenda?
The apparent agenda was to find out what people thought of a housing project in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And our housing needs. But it was very confusing because it all has to do with the Dolphin apartment building, which at the town meeting, we came in protest of knocking down a building to put up a project. There are many people housed there, and it would cause a lot of homelessness. At that meeting, Tim Fitzmaurice told us unequivocally that there was no such project in mind.
This was at the earlier town hall meeting.
Yeah, just a few weeks ago.
And so last night, did Tim confirm this?
He still says there's no plan, but he's gone door to door in the Dolphin in our neighborhood with three university students who speak Spanish. No university students from our neighborhood, people from outside the neighborhood, and knocked on doors and asked people to see basically, you know, what was wrong with their apartment. And
now, did he also go to Canfield's apartments and ask there?
Oh, no, no. And he didn't. I was told by Chris Krohn that he did every house in the flats. Well, he never came here. He never went to Phil Bear's. Any of the people who were really active, you know, he did not come near our houses.
But weren't a lot of people from the Dolphin complex active?
Well, that is a problem because they were the only ones that organized here in the flats. They all joined Western Service Workers, and they all organized against the Beach Flat plan. So, but they stuck mainly, our neighborhood is 50-50, 50% Caucasian, 50% Latino, and they only want to talk to Latinos. They are still acting like this neighborhood is primarily Latino, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but certainly it's good that they are talking to Latinos.
I think that they need to talk to everyone. They're trying to do things where, you know, I don't want to go back to where meetings are held only in Spanish, where they separate the Latinos from the Caucasians, tell them one thing in a meeting, tell us another. We don't attend the same meetings. We have all been fighting for a unity in our neighborhood that they constantly try to split apart.
Now, who is the they and who? You
think? Well, it was the old city council, but now to me the new city council is using the exact same tactics. What they started with, they wanted to know what people's fears were. So, you know, people brought up their fears about losing their apartment to a project and not qualifying, all of the same things. But they were really furious when it was brought up that people were, like, they don't want their doors knocked on. They don't want to answer to strangers that for at least 2 years now, and actually more, our neighborhood has been besieged by white people with interpreters. Michael Hernandez came. He was about the only Latino. But wanting to see people's houses and people being afraid to say no, thinking they were the law or they were, you know. And so, and at that point, it was really clear that Tim Fitzmaurice had no interest in what people's fears were. He was going to do it no matter what. In fact, he stated no matter how inconvenient it was, he was going to walk this neighborhood and knock on people's doors. So even though they asked what people were afraid of, they didn't listen. I got up and asked them the question. I said, if a group of people came into your neighborhood and started going door to door, a group of Latinos in your posh neighborhood, would you want your wife opening the door to strangers that you didn't know, ostensibly who wanted to see your house? Or, and he gave me a very smart-aleck answer, saying, my wife it can take care of herself. That'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not even grounded in reality, you know. They want what they want, and we don't know what that is.
Well, some would say, I don't know if this is true. In fact, I have my suspicion that it's not, but there certainly are areas of Santa Cruz where there are profiteering landlords and substandard housing. What's your idea about dealing with that? We have a tenants' rights union in Santa Cruz. It's defending tenants every week, in court, trying to help them stop illegal evictions.
Uh-huh.
What should the city council's role be?
I don't know. I don't know if they should have any role in that. I don't know, unless they go for rent control, which, you know, to me is always a good thing. But and pass an ordinance as to some sort of rent control. But, you know, it's a very difficult evaluating process because many people, because they may not be legal, because of bad experiences with a landlord in the past, are afraid to say when things are wrong. They think their rent might be raised when the landlord fixes it, or, you know, that something bad is going to happen to them, even though they did nothing to break it. You know what I'm saying?
I do, but then isn't it a positive thing when an activist, and I guess we might fancy that Fitzmaurice fancies himself an activist, comes to the door and says, hey, is there something wrong with your building? Is there any way we can help? That this is a way that people can talk and express their concerns that they wouldn't normally do?
No, I don't see that as a role for... No, I don't. I don't think... I think that more that would be... If you were worried about that kind of thing, I think that you would have big meetings in the flat saying these are your rights. Legal aid would do them. Even if city council wanted, you'd do educational meetings. I mean...
Well, are those meetings needed? Would you support those kind of meetings?
I would support them, sure. I don't really think they're needed. In fact, one of the renters got up and said, I would not let you in my apartment without my landlord being there. And I don't think that you should be going into people's houses without the landlord being there. I don't understand. Much as I said when Linda Garner, you know, was just walking into people's houses.
Now, who is Linda Garner?
The zoning, the person who was the code enforcement officer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless she had permission from my landlord, I wasn't going to let her in. I, you know, and they said people are afraid of their landlords to the guy. The guy wasn't. He's a renter. He was looking to his landlord for protection from them. You know, only if my landlord says it's okay, I'm not. And they're like, well, we would never do that because people are afraid of their landlords. I mean, there's a big assumption here. They spoke a lot at the meeting about people being intimidated to be heard. Same stuff they did at city council. Like, people were standing there with clubs waiting to hurt people.
I know Tim Fitzmaurice was a big champion of the rights of the bigots at the city council meeting, but didn't have too much to say about the rights of homeless people, I know.
No, I called Tim Fitzmaurice Scott Kennedy 1, and I called Keith Sugar Scott Kennedy 2 when I left.
Really?
I mean, that's how angry I was. And Keith Sugar made this rousing speech about how in the state of California, it's against the law for any landlord to retaliate when you complain that things are wrong. And if anybody has that problem, they contact Legal Aid. If during this process anybody has this problem. Now, there are really important issues at stake. The owners of the Dolphin do not want to sell. So there's a lawyer that owns it and a real estate agent, I believe, that are partners. They are not interested in selling it, so you're talking about eminent domaining it. And, there were very intelligent people there, and, they were saying, I don't understand. There's all kinds of empty properties that Seaside has bought up, will not let people live in them. They're sitting empty all over here. There's a court. There's something like 45 empty apartments that Seaside Company owns.
That's the Canfield Corporation.
Right.
The boardwalk.
And people were saying, well, why don't you eminent domain those? And then they had some big BS story about how you have to pay market rate when you eminent domain. And so, again, I said, I need the financial end of this explained to me. Are you telling me that you don't have to pay market rate if you eminent domain the Dolphin? I mean, what is the difference? All this property is worth a lot. And again, there was they just never gave a straight answer to anything. And they really resented people talking.
Here's Becky Johnson with some thoughts on this.
I thought it was interesting when they said, well, is there anybody here from the Seaside Company? And anybody at all? And then finally, the woman way in the back said, well, yeah, I'm from the Seaside Company. But the information she gave out seemed very... It didn't seem to jive with what we'd heard. She seemed to deny that
Diane
Canfield had much property at all.
Did you hear that call?
Well, I heard a little bit. Diane Ligon was there from the boardwalk, and this was the thing. I thought it was very funny that someone that wanted there not to be any fear, for it to just be a neighborhood meeting, had all kinds of agency people there, city people there, and a member of the boardwalk contingency. So that we're listening to everything everyone said. I didn't see that as being conducive to a no-fear sort of meeting. But when Diane was asked about all these properties, she had no knowledge of them emptying residential properties ever in 15 years. Well, maybe one. I mean, it was ridiculous. We've watched the whole process because when they thought the plan was going to be approved last year, they emptied all their residential apartments out so they did not have to pay relocation fees.
I thought you had a little amnesia on that.
Yeah. Everybody seems to have a little amnesia. And so my problem with the meeting was I didn't understand why they were going about things in the very same way that Scott Kennedy had and everyone else, why they were doing it that way when... You know, in the long run, we found out they were basically spying on us. They weren't being friendly or in any way interested in our lives. They just wanted what they wanted. And it was brought up to them over and over that they were following in a path that people didn't trust.
Mm-hmm.
And Keith Sugar rolled his eyes a lot when he didn't like what Phil Bear or someone else was saying. I mean, talk about people... not being able to talk for fear of, it was a ridiculous meeting if you ask me, ridiculous. And as far as I'm concerned, they can recall all three of those people.
Wow.
You know, they didn't win by that big of a margin, they won by the people who were loyal to them. And I was very surprised to see Veronica, who worked really hard with the Beach Area Working Group, who's bilingual, I think she lives in the neighborhood, telling the Hispanics to trust these men, that they only had their best interests at heart. It made me very sad.
Now, there were a few speakers that said that. Just trust these guys. They're good guys. Just, you know, let them take care of it. It's not a good sign.
Did you hear that, Roxanne?
Yeah. It was very disturbing to me.
What's next on the agenda here? Is there another meeting planned? Is there another step forward or backward being planned here? What do you see happening?
Well, Tim's going to continue to walk the neighborhood and you know, find out true information from those who are too afraid to speak up. And, you know, we were trying to say, you know, a lot of people don't report things. It's great if you can open up dialogue between them and the landlord. Like he was saying, he saw stoves and refrigerators that didn't work. The thing that was interesting was the three university students that ran around mm-hmm. and talked to people. They were the actual people to do the talking because they speak Spanish.
Yeah.
The article that came out in the newspaper that stated that there were a lot of problems that they uncovered and stuff said that the newspaper never spoke to them. One girl said her feeling was that people were very happy. And another girl said, you know, that there were a couple things wrong. A couple. And she said she didn't know where they got their information. Tim Fitzmaurice made it sound like there was a lot wrong. I felt sorry for the students because I don't think that they, you know, I don't think their point of view is being represented at all.
Now, has Tim Fitzmaurice talked to you about this issue, or have you tried to talk to him?
No, he hasn't talked to me. As Phil Baer and I have noticed, these people have no interest in talking to us, even though we're residents. None whatsoever. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Any thoughts on this, Becky?
Have I what?
I was just asking Becky if she had any thoughts.
Well, I was just surprised.
Go ahead.
I was surprised by the denial that there was any interest in the Dolphin Lee project.
Yeah,
there was Elizabeth so Vogel from Mercy Charities Housing in the audience.
Mercy Charities is the group that will be running the project.
Yeah.
Where there was the article that had appeared in the Sentinel that detailed quite a bit of it, including, you know, even, you know, how many people are going to be displaced.
Yeah, but we're supposed to trust them because there really is no project. I mean,
and,
that's a ridiculous thing. I don't know what they're pulling.
I of course, sided with the people who spoke and said there are, you know, several units of housing that really wouldn't take very much to fix up that could, at the most minimal cost, provide new housing in the city. Of course, the majority of those are owned by the Seaside Company. That makes the most sense. Now, behind the scenes, we've heard that perhaps what's going on is that they want to build some sort of a low-income project sort of thing, Mercy Charities at the helm, and that they don't really want to tackle the Seaside Company with an eminent domain because the law costs, the attorneys that the Seaside Company could hire would be greater. It would be easier to pick something like the Dolphin, which, you know, just doesn't have as deep pockets. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that is one consideration that's going around.
What does that mean, that it doesn't have deep pockets? It's worth, the property's worth a lot.
Actually, I would say that Canfield has deeper pockets in terms of being able to, you know, if you sue him, but he also has deeper more resources to fight a legal battle. I guess that's what...
Oh, I see what you're saying. I can hardly hear. Okay.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm gonna try to get a hold of Phil Baer on the line after we play this next interview with Lou Rice, who's just gone off his hunger strike, or actually did it about a week ago. And I want to thank you, Roxanne. We're talking to Roxanne Acostapache and Becky Johnson on a meeting that happened last night in the Beach Flats, I guess around the issue of housing concerns in the Beach Flats, which Tim Fitzmaurice threw.
One thing I didn't understand, if you're in a hurry to wind this up, I understand, but I was hoping Becky Johnson mm-hmm. would explain how Mercy Housing ends up being the owners of these projects, not the city. I was really confused about how they end up as owners of the property.
Well, apparently that was confirmed. That, you know, that was my question.
And it is confirmed. So what are we doing? Buying property for Mercy?
It seems to be that after all of the federal, state, county, and city funds and private donations go into the pool, in the end, Mercy owns it.
Mm-hmm.
And Mercy would be collecting whatever rents are collected
uh-huh.
there. We did hear her say that the rents would be locked in perpetuity into affordable rents of some, you know, according to some scale.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's on the plus side, but it does beg to ask, what is the city thinking? I mean, you either want to end up with the project being owned by the city or owned by the individual tenants. Not a third party that is not really can do whatever it wants. And I don't think she answered the question about whether Mercy Charities could sell the property.
Oh, they didn't really. Every answer we got was pretty vague and very short and being translated so that you couldn't hear exactly what was being said.
The translation was very poor,
I thought. Very poor.
Both in the mechanical ability with these little headsets and the translator himself seemed to be giving a very abbreviated version of what the Spanish language speakers were saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I want you to explain that, Becky, because I don't get it.
I still don't get it.
I will say that Una Bear talked about, after the meeting, talked to people about, why aren't we investigating HUD? Why is everything Mercy Housing? There were, who finds the lots? Who finds the opportunity sites? We wanted to know. We wanted to know, why isn't there a notice put out if you have property to sell in the city of Santa Cruz? You know? There, or if you're interested in selling your property, you know, whatever. There's nothing done. They go find places that are already being habitated and, you know, inhabited, I mean, and just start thinking about eminent domaining them.
Well, I want to thank you, Roxanne. I'm going to roll on
because okay.
I'm catching the end of the hour. But
thanks for calling, Robert.
Let us know what the next, the next meeting is that people should show up at or the next action people should take, because I think it's really an important subject. It certainly was important enough to win an election for these three, and it sounds to me like a significant betrayal if they are in fact taking up the old cudgels of the Kennedy-Rotkin group.
Well, the thing is, we don't even feel that they're ill-intentioned necessarily. It's when they don't listen to how their actions are bringing very bad feelings to the people in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
When they show that they don't really care, then we get worried. I really didn't think they were ill-intentioned. I thought they were just ignorant like they were when they did their little,
sleeping down the trail? Yeah.
Thing, and I just...
It's hard for me to believe they were ignorant after 3 months of hearings, but...
No, I mean, they went out and stirred up a bunch of anger, and, it went badly, and to me, that's what they're doing here. It's going badly.
Well, I thank you for the briefing on that.
Okay.
All
right.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Let's zip ahead because we're going to be shoved out of the studio shortly. Here's Lou Rice talking about why he ended his fast.
About 7:05 on May 16th, we're downtown. We're talking to Lou Rice, who has... For 27 days, was without food in front of the post office, seeking better conditions for people at the Homeless Services Center, which he was spent some time using and checking out. And on Wednesday evening, there was no sign of Lou. We were a bit worried that perhaps something happened to you, but apparently something. You made a decision at that point.
Yeah, I had spoken with quite a few people in the offices here, as far as the mayor, the councilman, the board members of the homeless services organization up there, and anyhow, they have a new administrator over that place up there. It was Mr. Cole, and he came by and saw me the day prior to that. Me and him talked for about 45 minutes, maybe an hour, and I suggested a couple things he go look at, and he was already well informed about the situation there and some of the improvements that he was already, the people there, not just him, but the people there that worked there were instituting. And anyhow, I told him, I said, if you would, go look at these other things and see what you think about them and come back and see me when you get through. And I knew that with the time schedule for some of them, it'd be in the afternoon. He came back, I guess, about 2, 2.30 that afternoon.
Wednesday?
Yeah, on Wednesday. And he talked with me, and he told me that, you know, the first three things that I hoped would get accomplished were cleaner, better nutrition, and but two of them were, and one of them was a drinking fountain, and he assured me if they had a drinking fountain and they couldn't get it installed, he was going to go ahead and get a plumber to do it and get it done. And I think the man's an honest man, and I told him, I said, well, after what you told me, I said, if you'll give me a few minutes, and I'll give you an answer, yes, no, and it won't be indifferent. And he was good enough to go and give me a pack of smokes. And
so, the real reason you broke your fast?
No.
Just kidding.
But anyhow, he came back, and I told him, I said, you know, I believe you're a concerned person and knowledgeable, very knowledgeable about this stuff. And I told him that, you know, the one thing that I did not want to see was like business as usual as I'd known it up there. And he said it won't be. He said it's going to take him some time with other people's help. And the man said, you know, he needs all the help he can get, because it's not an easy thing. It can be improved. And it needs to be improved because these are cost-effective things, you know. And I told him, I said, well, you know, you might be able to renege on your word that you know you're talking to me about. But I said, no, I don't think you can renege on your word to yourself, you know. And he said he couldn't. So I told him, I said, well, that's good enough for me. I said, the answer's yes, and I'll get my stuff up in here and try to get me some nourishment and get a bath.
You actually have been, you know, you've been to the hospital since that time. You know, it's not an easy thing to do a 27-day fast.
I wouldn't suggest it to anybody, nobody. It's the most difficult thing I've ever done in my entire life, bar none. It's a trying thing. It's a emotional and a feelings thing, and you got to look at that. You got to also take a real honest look at the possibility you may die. The last night I spent up there was the most miserable night that I can remember in 30 years. And I could have probably done another one, but then I sure as hell didn't want to.
What do you think, if you had this to do over again, Lou, would you... what would you do, or is that even a question that one can answer?
I don't have the ability to do it over again. I know this.
If you hadn't done it and you had a chance, would you do it again, or would you have adopted it some other way, or if you had foresight, if you could see what, or hindsight, or both, what would you tell yourself? You could go back in time a month. How would you advise yourself on how to proceed?
I would probably do it a nutrition fast instead of a no nutrition fast, because if you take juices and stuff in, your body's better off than it is without them, you know. But other than the reason I did it was I couldn't stand the idea of not doing anything and just forgetting it and going on about my business. If I could have lived with that, I wouldn't have done it. But it was the only thing that I knew of that I could do and not pick a fight. Damn fight ain't the answer on this. You know, and I'm so glad that what I did, when I sat down at the post office, I was I was lost. I was lonely. I didn't know what to do, and I just started saying hello to people and hi, how are you? It's a nice day, whatever. And I met some very, very wonderful people, young, old, in between, and they have a good spirit. They have a good recognition of values. And I bet you if I had to rate it on a percentage from 0 to 100, 99.5% of them were nothing but enjoyable, good people to talk to and concerned.
Thank you, Lou. Anything you want to conclude with?
Well, nobody can do anything alone. You know, everybody needs each other to do something, you know, and if these are your wishes that, you know, people's lives can be better than just enduring, you know, the darndest thing is if a person's in jail, they're there as punishment, not for punishment, you know. And I think that, you know, a lot of people understand that. And it's a very short distance from being a person in a society that has a home, job, family, to a person who doesn't have those things. I know this from my own existence. And that's about it. And I'd like to say thanks. Thanks to all the people that I met, spent time with me, and prayed that, you know, this thing could be resolved in a good way. And I think it has. And I think it will continue to, because these are things that are sustainable. And they're better for everybody around, because just eliminate a lot of stuff that is costly and no reason for.
Thank you, Lou. We've been talking to Lou Rice, a man who fasted for 27 days in the steps of the post office in search of better food, adequate nutrition for homeless people at the Homeless Services Center, a fountain, and a decent treatment with respect. And I guess we'll be seeing in the next few weeks whether that's going to come to fruition, or whether old cynics like myself will grunt and grumble some more. Thank you, Lou.
Quit grunting and grumbling. Help them do it.
Thank you.
Allison Whitman.
And Allison, we just finished a CAB meeting, and you've got some interesting contradictions you wanted to bring up. You say that you're actually working, you're not homeless, but the abyss looms.
Well, I think I'm really lucky in that I'm one of the few people in Santa Cruz County who actually make what would be considered a decent wage. I make $15 an hour working for the county, but in spite of that, I have to work part-time second job to be able to just feed my kids, because almost my whole net check goes towards my rent.
Which is how much?
$1,300 a month. Ah!
How many kids?
Two. So I have to work the second job so I can also pay the PG&E and the phone and feed the kids and buy their lunch, and, you know, I don't qualify for a lot of the programs. Actually, when I was on welfare with Housing Authority, my standard living was better. But now that I'm, you know, off of those things, which I'm not complaining, I had a good run. I was able to get myself a living wage a couple years ago. Now, I'm working for the county and making what I consider to be a fair wage and good wage in comparison to a lot of people I know in the county, but I still have to work the second job. I applied for Habitat for Humanity. Yeah, I applied for Habitat for Humanity, which
sweat equity.
It gets low-income people into their own homes, and I didn't qualify. My income was too high, which was because of the second job that I have to work to pay my rent.
So it's not really your income, it's your outgo. It's the landlord's income.
I also didn't qualify for the earned income credit because of my second job that I have to pay, that I have to work to pay my rent and be able to feed my kids. So I think that in the absence of any, in the near future, solution to the housing problem, the ridiculous housing prices in our area, we need to have some renters' breaks And maybe some of those programs, income scales, need to be adjusted for what's realistic.
Don't hold your breath.
Income, housing, payment ratios.
Make it so, as commander.
So that's it. I just wanted to say, I don't consider myself working for poverty level wages, but I'm still living a poverty level lifestyle and having to work like 65 hours a week, and I still can't pay my bill. So that's it.
Thank you.
And
one of the only men recently to beat a camping ticket, even after being found guilty, what's the secret of your success? How do you beat one of these sleeping ban tickets?
You just flat out refuse to pay it. You refuse to pay it at the time that you're found guilty and sentenced, and then they'll issue a warrant for you, and you call up and get another date for that warrant, and you go to court again, and at that time, you tell them you're still not going to pay it, and you tell them that the warrant is not valid because it cannot lock you up for a failure to pay a infraction, or they cannot lock you up for the infraction. So basically, their law is dead in the water. That's the hole in, so crawl through the hole and escape.
And if you want more information, you can reach Dennis at 423-4833. Also, Dennis, you said you heard recently about, we had hoped that sleeping tickets were dead, but then I began to hear more being issued, or at least some being issued. You heard of a man named Tom who got a ticket?
I heard about him getting a ticket. He was sleeping outside. He was not in the vehicle, but this happened in the last week. And he didn't tell, I didn't get a chance to get too many details because he was in a hurry. But I know it was in the last week. And I did tell him what I just told you about how I got away with mine. So
this could be the beginning of the Tricky Dicky resistance against the camping ordinance or the sleeping ban part of the camping ordinance, or maybe a little of both.
Thank you, Dennis.
You're welcome.
And that's about it for Bathrooms, Beers, Broadsides for this week. A couple of quick notes. I hate to go out on this, but these are a couple of news briefs we should give you. John Earth, previously of Feed the People, has been indicted for manslaughter in Fresno, California. Apparently they're trying to not only add grief to grief in the death of Sean Alimi last November, where John was at the wheel and fell asleep, but they're going to try to show that maybe there was cannabis in his bloodstream and put him away in jail. We're not sure what's going on with this. More next time on this issue. We're also going to be talking about the ICORN decision and how San Diego homeless people are effectively using the right to use the necessity defense to stop sleeping ban and camping ban tickets down there. Tonight at 8 o'clock, I remind you, the Yugoslav Crisis Forum is meeting at Loudoun-Nielsen Center. For those of you who have any confidence in that process, and I tell you I don't, not with that particular group at this time. Secondly, tomorrow night at 7:30, there'll be an organizational meeting at the town clock for a protest of Sam Farr, which will be happening the next night. Farr is coming to have a downtown banquet, and we can be beggars at his banquet. That's at the McPherson Center at 6:30 on Saturday. Assemble at the town clock at 5:45. But tomorrow night, Friday night, 7:30 to organize that, and 8:30 to protest the sleeping ban, the war, and freedom for political prisoners such as Mumia Abu-Jamal at the town clock. I've gone overtime again, and Dennis is grabbing you by the scruff of the neck. So before
I'm grabbing you by the collar of your bathrobe.
And so until next time, this is Robert of Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides, inviting you to join us on Sunday at 11 o'clock.
The name of the woman who began the Southern Bus Boycott, as you know, is Ms. Rosa Parks. In Montgomery, Alabama, not a long time ago, a covering lady sat down on a bus. She worked hard, she did day work, she swept floors with fever, and since that day she'd changed the world for us. The cause she said, no sir, I won't get up. I'm tired and I wanna sit down and I won't get up. You can talk about Martin Luther King, had demonstrations and a thing. Just remember who began it, Rosie Parks. Well, in this wide and wicked world, tell me, what kind of man would say to a nice old lady, nigga, get up? Well, she looked just like me and you, and she did what she could do, and she said, no, sir, I won't get up. And she said, no, sir, I won't get up, I won't get up. I'm tired and I wanna sit down, and I won't get up, I won't get up. You can talk about Martin Luther King, have demonstrations and a thing. Just remember who began it, Rosie Parks. Well, now one day the South will rise, and the North will realize who our heroes really truly are. And then I'll tear down the statues of Robert E. Lee and the wonderful good old Rosie Parks. Because she said, no sir, I won't get up, I won't get up. I'm tired and I wanna sit down and I won't get up, I won't get up. You can talk about Martin Luther King, had demonstrations and a thing. Just remember who began it, Rosie Parks, try with me. Because she said, no sir, I won't get up, I won't get up. I'm tired and I wanna sit down and I won't get up, I won't get up. You can talk about Martin Luther King, had demonstrations and a thing. Just remember who began it, Rosie Parks.
That's right. You've forgotten. Anyway, in case you've forgotten, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. Robert's on his way out the door just as soon as I can loose the dogs upon him.
Get away from me.
And I'm Uncle Dennis, and it's time for Earth First Radio. Stand by.